Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. Now here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
This week we'll discuss the 10-year anniversary of 9/11 with AFGE Social Security Administration Local 1760 Vice President Sean O'Connell. We'll also take a look at the labor movement's use of social media with AFGE 14th District National Vice President Dwight Bowman, and the continued attack on public sector workers with 6th District National Vice President Arnold Scott and SSA Local 3448 Labor Management Relations Vice President Patty Davis Sato. But up first with us is AFGE SSA Local 1760 Vice President Sean O'Connell. Sean, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, Sean, as we near the 10-year anniversary of 9/11, you were in New York that day working as a federal employee for SSA. Tell us about your experiences that day.
It's 10 years on, it still seems so surreal and unbelievable that it actually happened. That day, I attend, because we have flex place, flex time at our place, at our workplace, Social Security. I decided, I mean, just by happenstance, I didn't feel like going in early that day. So essentially when I, at the time I was living in West Harlem, when I boarded the A train on 125th Street around 9 a.m., it was just, 15 minutes after the first plane hit, and almost exactly the same time as the second plane had hit. And I took the train down, and within a couple stops from when I usually get off, they said there was an incident in the World Trade Center. And basically for the next 2 hours, it was a matter of trying to it was unclear as to actually what happened at the World Trade Center, so I was still trying to report to my duty station, as I was supposed to do. And for the next couple of hours, I was basically underground within a mile of the World Trade Center, unaware of exactly the entirety of what happened. But when I finally got topside, at first it was unclear what was going on, and then it was basically when I finally was able to access the tree side, it was just, maybe a half hour after the towers had gone down. And it was still unbelievable looking to the spot of the World Trade Center, which, it's interesting that the World Trade Center was never very much beloved when it was first built, but over time it became an icon and also a matter of navigation, not just for pedestrians around Manhattan, but also for, skilled trades as well. A perfect example, actually, dock builders used to use the World Trade Center to make alignments for the work they used to do. So when I was finally able to, just a matter of blocks from the World Trade Center, look up and see the missing beacon for all those New Yorkers, it's so unbelievable that, that it could be done, so cheaply and so, and so capriciously in terms of whether who lived and who died. So when it happened, even just talking about it now, it's just unbelievable. When that thought, when I looked back and all I saw was a big cloud. It's amazing that it happened, and it's unfortunate that it did, considering how people lost their lives, those who were in there just working, and also the first responders who tried their best to save lives, and they did. I mean, it was one of the most successful evacuations of a building, of those buildings, and people tend to forget that. But in terms of without the expertise of first responders, scores, thousands more would have died. But it's just amazing. I mean, it was interesting when I posted my 9/11 email onto the AFGE website after asking after the national had asked for reflections upon it. But it was really interesting just revisiting, because I honestly had not looked at that email in nearly 10 years. And it was basically a response to, all the harried phone calls I'd gotten from coworkers and family as to, are you okay? Because they know I only walk, they know I work only a matter of like 6 blocks away from the Trade Center. It was really spooky kind of revisiting it and kind of reliving what had happened. Like I said, the recurring thing is just, I can't believe it's been 10 years, but I can't believe it happened at all.
Sean, as you look back, and you had mentioned, of course, the email that you had posted on AFGE's member stories site, when did you realize the magnitude of this event that day?
I think, what's interesting, when I revisited my email, was just that, we got bits and pieces while we were stuck in the subway below. And my first impression, I think I even heard on the radio, was just that, you know, 10 minutes earlier, a plane had hit one of the World Trade Center towers. And I thought back of during World War II, a plane had hit a B-25 hit the Empire State Building. And it was a loss of life, which is unfortunate enough, but, you know, the Empire State bounced back quickly. It didn't really hit me, the enormity didn't hit me until that instant when I was on Church Street, maybe just a block north of Chambers, which would have been at Church and Duane Street, which was one of the firehouses. And when I looked up and when I did not see those two towers, and I just saw a huge cloud just billowing towards Brooklyn, that's when I knew it, just how enormous it was. And one of the things to keep in mind, though, is that, you know, people remark upon it, on what a beautiful day it was, and it was such a day. And so in my account, when I was revisiting it, when we finally got to the my last subway stop close to work, which is the City Hall stop, and they had backed up, we had to walk through maybe four or five abandoned long subway cars to finally get topside. The detectives, they were initially pointing us hurriedly north towards Chinatown. Now, I had to go west towards work, but when we had gotten up to the top of the subway stairs, you looked north and all you saw was beautiful sky. And it was only when you looked over your shoulder you saw this billowing cloud, which was the first sign I had something bad was happening. But like I said, I didn't realize the enormity until I was on Duane and Church. I looked up and I saw these huge towers, you know, and one of them I had even visited a couple of months earlier for Windows of the World, a buddy of mine who was, or actually still is, a street crime in the Bronx at the NYPD, who I mentioned in my post. And when I talked to him, I had gone up to look to the Windows of the World just like a month or so beforehand. And I remember going against the window and looking down and feeling like you were on an airplane. I mean, I remember thinking that. And now that time, that moment, looking back and seeing them not there, that's when I knew it was entirely beyond, you know, anything I could comprehend or you know, presume that much damage could be done in such a short period of time.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with AFGE SSA Local 1760 Vice President Sean O'Connell about his experiences as a federal employee in New York on 9/11 10 years ago. Sean, what was the reaction of the people that you met along your travels that day?
It really was, as you can imagine, for something that happened that day. I really saw the full range. I mean, when I was making my way back home, which normally would take only a half an hour by subway, but in those 4 hours of getting back home up to West Harlem, you know, it was amazing. You know, people were trekking. It was like an exodus. People were trekking north, and you see people, you know, covered in ash, you know, really distraught. People just listening to, you know, radios, and people lining up to, you know, talk to their loved ones. But what was amazing is that the emotions, you know, a lot of it was empathy. When people were making that exodus, people came out and was offering them aid, offering them food. When we got close to St. Vincent, people automatically there was some kind of call in terms of donating blood, because at first, you know, there were some people who were brought to St. Vincent. Unfortunately, it wasn't more that they hoped, you know, because of the lethality of the towers coming down, that, you know, people were willing to donate blood right in the spot. And then St. Vincent was actually overwhelmed by the response. Also, when I finally got to a bar that I could actually get something to eat, when I saw the actual footage for the first time of what happened, I mean, that's when, I mean, the real, you know, that seeing that these planes were driven that way in such purpose, you know, such purposeful kamikaze attacks, of course, it makes you angry. And you know, as unfortunate as some of those first shots, saw the people jumping from the buildings, which was heart-wrenching. But, you know, in terms of people's reactions, as you can imagine, it was all of those. And then when people were processing and there was some inkling who did it, I mean, it was real rage. I mean, I mentioned how when I was in that bar, how there was a lot of construction and skilled trades and also involved in elevator repair. And, you know, they really wanted, they really wanted justice and maybe even rough justice. But when you saw those, images, and especially a lot of those guys had worked on the World Trade Center. So there was a lot of invested. There was a lot of hurt going on that day.
Sean, talk about the work of the first responders who you knew personally, who put their lives on the line that day.
Yeah, it's once again, that's one of those amazing stories. And the other thing to keep in mind, though, is that you had, the FDNY, you had NYPD, you had Port Authority, you also had court officers who, New York State court officers who had to go several blocks to assist on their own. And the thing to keep in mind, besides them being courageous, is that, every one of them were union members. I mean, there's a lot of anti-union rhetoric, but when it comes to who responded and who acted above and beyond what they needed, these were union members. These were public employees. These were people, who decided that they wanted to help people and give back and not necessarily, do other occupations. They felt this is their calling. And it's a real testament. I mean, 343 firefighters died, 23 NYPD officers, 37 Port Authority police officers. I mean, they died doing their job, and many of them really went out of their way to respond and help out. I mean, besides those firefighters who were active, who were responding, there were also numerous retirees who came and who just responded just to help out the brothers and sisters who really needed the assistance of experienced personnel. But it was very difficult, very trying. In the bar I worked at the time, I knew several firemen. Fortunately, they all had made it out. Even today, now that I live on Staten Island, I have a neighbor who worked on at World Trade Center who responded there. I have other friends on Staten Island as well who were firefighters who, because of those attacks, they couldn't go on anymore. They finally had to retire or get disability. So it's a recurring theme with these men and women put up with, and some of them actually gave all. I mean, there's a classic bumper sticker, some gave all gave some, and that really was the case of the first responders on that day.
Sean, lastly, what did you learn from your experiences that day as someone who's in New York firsthand seeing this?
What I really learned was just how fragile and how capricious life can be. I mean, there were so many variables involved that, you really have to, cherish what you have and as much as you can try to realize that, things, are not permanent. I mean, for example, my office, which is the Quality Assurance Branch of Social Security, they were located in the World Trade Center buildings between 1979 and 1983. I mean, in 83, my office moved to 26 Federal Plaza, and that was just 10 years before one of the first attack on the World Trade Center, the bombing. Other variables as well. I mean, I had taken the test and it scored very well on the NYPD test and the FDNY test back in 2000. Actually, just before I turned 30, so I would have been in police academy or just out of the police academy or just out of the fire academy in 2000. I also, my subway stop is right next to the World Trade Center. If I'd gotten off in a couple cars closer to the World Trade Center, or if I'd gotten off earlier I would have seen horrible things. So it just shows you just how, you really have to buckle down and value what you have and protect what you have, because you don't know what the future will hold.
Sean O'Connell, AFGE SSA Local 1760 Vice President. Sean, thanks so much for your time and coming on today and sharing your story.
No problem. Thank you very much.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, AFGE 14th District National Vice President Dwight Bowman will talk about the labor movement's use of social media.
Looking for a hassle-free way to buy a new computer, electronics, or home appliances? Purchasing Power allows you to buy items such as Dell laptops, HP desktops, and Kenmore appliances through easy payroll deduction. There's no upfront cash required, no credit checks, and AFGE members get a 6% discount with promo code AFGEMember. That's all one word. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com. That's shoppurchasingpower.com.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. Call the AFGE Benefits line at 1-888-844-2343 today to see how much you could save. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Attention AFGE members. AFGE has formed an exclusive partnership with Grantham University to offer you and your family members a special discounted tuition rate. With Grantham University's 100% online degree programs, it's even easier to earn a college degree while working full-time and meeting the needs of your family. Military and government training may be eligible for transfer credit. Find out more at grantham.edu/AFGE. That's grantham.edu/AFGE.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Dwight Bowman, AFGE District 14 National Vice President. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you once again for having me. It's always enjoyable.
Today we've got you here at AFGE's Human Rights Training Conference in Atlanta, Georgia. You just came out of the social media workshop training. Tell us about it.
It was excellent. Enid and the staff did an excellent job as usual. I learned a lot. Even though we're constantly engaged with our Facebook page and the different kinds of communications that we have, this was truly a good learning experience. The class was packed. They were motivated, energized. Very active, very hands-on, and I was surprised to see all of the computers with the new information, the new disk on, with all of that interactive material, so that we were able to keep up with what was going on. And in addition, we were able to see some of the websites and some of the blog sites and the Twitter sites. It was just fantastic in terms of seeing what is going on with social media today.
Talk about the role of social media in how AFGE serves its members in the labor movement.
Well, the communications department has been excellent in terms of keeping up. We find that social media and all of the sites are changing rapidly. What AFGE has done is been able to keep up, to get the information out to the members, and to train the members on how to use social media. With all that's going on Capitol Hill and in the D.C. government right now, there's a necessity to be able to get to the membership and let them know what we know, what has been transpiring, and at the same time help people to prepare for the eventualities that we know are coming.
Over the years, how have things changed? How has social media changed the way the union operates?
Well, we are bringing people into the 21st century through our social media, through our communications department. I remember when I first became national vice president back in 2005, we had a number of individuals who were local leaders, who were actually local presidents, who did not have computers, and, you know, the best that they were doing was cell phones. This training and the way that the communications department has been able to keep up and to get information out has impressed everyone who is in the leadership role and has started moved them to a point where they are now engaged, which means that they now engage their members. So it makes us more tightly knit, and it allows us to respond as we should to the various events that affect us.
Are you finding that your members in District 14 are really getting on board with this technological wave that's here?
Oh, they have to. I mean, we're inside the beltway where the Congress is. We have the D.C. government employees that are affected by the Congress, and a lot of people don't realize it, but that Congress, they try things out on the D.C. government, and then they go outside and try it on the rest of the communities that they represent. So it's really important for District 14, its membership, to be engaged, understand what's going on, and how it impacts.
Speaking of District 14 and inside the Beltway, what's the latest with your district and some of the issues going on in D.C. government?
Well, we're hearing more and more about furloughs and other kinds of drastic measures because the district budget is not good. Now, I remember when Vincent Gray, who is now the mayor, took over, and there was an expectation that we would have a fair shot at making our presentation and helping, you know, him to understand our needs. That's still somewhat the case. It's not as great as we would like, but we're seeing that because of all these financial problems, he's under a great deal of pressure to do things that he certainly doesn't want to do. It means that we're going to have to be even more active and concerned and involved.
You mentioned the district budget not being what you had hoped it would be, the potential for furloughs. How have the members responded to that?
Well, there are two different ways that they respond, or several different ways. One is in terms of when AFGE says we need to get out there and petition our government, they have been responding in an excellent fashion. When we provide them with the information through this social media in particular and tell them what the government is attempting to do, why they're doing it, and what our response should be, they're immediately on board. So that's one of the most important things and the best things that is going on right now. The response is excellent. In terms of their psyche, how they're feeling about it, they're discouraged. No one in the country, seeing what is happening, cannot be discouraged when we watch the politicians play games, when they protect their favorite programs, their favorite people, their favorite companies, corporations, or whatever it is. And there are certain services that just need to be taken care of at all times, from meat inspectors to nurses to picking up the garbage. All of those things are extremely important. When we see those budgets cut and we see the government saying that they need to cut back on the number of individuals, those things are monumentally devastating as well as important, something that we have to respond to.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with AFGE District 14 National Vice President Dwight Bowman. NVP Bowman, we knew during the Fenty administration that administration was not favorable to district employees. We've seen attacks on state workers nationwide, namely in Wisconsin and Indiana, Ohio, and elsewhere.
Correct.
We've seen attacks against the federal workers throughout the country. Do you find that D.C. public workers remain under attack to this day?
Absolutely. A large portion of the district's budget comes from the feds. And as a result of that, when the federal government is negatively impacted, when the budget is not good with them, it resonates and it transfers to the District of Columbia. So we're in a fashion held slave to that system. We have certain congressmen and senators who sit on committees that make decisions with regard to D.C. laws and D.C. budget and the like. As a result, some of them actually try to get away with doing things in the District of Columbia that they can't get away with in their own states and their own cities. And it's not good, it's not moral, it's just not something that should be.
You mentioned previously efforts to elect Vincent Gray as mayor of D.C. You had very high hopes with him coming in, hoping to be able to work with his administration to bring change for the workers and the residents, but also noted that a lot of things have happened, things out of your control. Do you still feel that there's opportunities to work with the mayor, and is he responsive to your overtures to make changes?
First, let me set the record straight. With regard to former Mayor Fenty, we were quite aware that we would be under more severe attacks if he continued in that position and had a second term. we were anticipating that it would be like Wisconsin or Ohio. That's one of the reasons that we worked so hard to make sure that he did not get a second term. When Vincent Gray came in, we understood who we were dealing with, at least most of us did, and we knew it wasn't going to be a panacea by any stretch of the imagination. What we did not expect from Mr. Gray was that he would attack us and try and destroy us, and he has not done that. He has been civil. He has been more than civil. He has been courteous. He has invited us to talk to him. He's given me calls on a couple of occasions to let me know what was about to happen, even though he knew I wouldn't like it. And that was important because it gave me a heads up, and it allowed me to tell my people what was going on and to work out a plan and also to respond to him. So we do have opportunity. One of the good things that he has done is he has taken his deputies and said, I want you to meet with the union. The AFL-CIO, in terms of the Central Labor Council, I'm a member of the board on the Central Labor Council, so I do get a chance to talk to the deputies and the people who are, you know, surrounding him. And once in a while, I will get a chance to, you know, to speak to him. So it's not an impossible situation. It's just that with this economy, it's not a good situation, irrespective.
And as I recall from our previous discussions and interviews, that's really what you were looking for District 14, was an opportunity to be part of the discussion, something that you weren't getting with the Fenty administration, but that you are getting now with the Gray administration, an opportunity to be at the table to participate in the discussion.
Absolutely. We are in a much, much better situation, and we hope to make it even better. What I'm doing right now is working with the Central Labor Council, the State Federation, and the locals that we have in D.C. and the other international unions to make sure that we're all on the same page, because this is one of those times when you really have to have unity. You cannot have different unions going off in different directions or different locals seeing things in a different way. There has to be core value understanding and a concentrated effort that is unified.
And do you find that your membership is on board with that core values and understanding and unity?
Yes, and what I found when I first got to the conference was a couple of the locals coming over and saying, Dwight, we've got a situation coming up that we know about, and we'd like to talk to you as soon as we get back to Washington. And I find that to be, you know, a very good sign. We've always had conversations, but now you can see that everybody recognizes the necessity to keep everybody plugged in, clued in, and working together.
AFGE places a high emphasis on training its activists, its leaders, its rank-and-file members. How important are these training sessions that AFGE puts on throughout the year?
Well, they're tremendously important. One, we get the latest information on what is occurring, and what we share ideas about how to counter some of these bad things, and we share information about with one another about what is going on site. We get it from top to bottom, president of the union to the union steward. We have folks from all over the country, and it's a terrific sharing and learning experience.
AFGE District 14 National Vice President Dwight Bowman, we certainly appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, AFGE 6th District National Vice President Arnold Scott will discuss the need to fight back against attacks on federal workers.
Attention AFGE members. AFGE has formed an exclusive partnership with Grantham University to offer you and your family members a special discounted tuition rate. With Grantham University's 100% online degree programs, it's even easier to earn a college degree while working full-time and meeting the needs of your family. Military and government training may be eligible for transfer credit. Find out more at grantham.edu/AFGE. That's grantham.edu/AFGE.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Arnold Scott, AFGE's 6th District National Vice President. MVP Scott, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
So we've got you here today at AFGE's Human Rights Training Conference in Atlanta. What are some of the key classes that you're looking forward to this week?
Some of the key classes, you talk about the EEO classes, which are outstanding. I've got people in the litigation classes. Covers a lot of various trainings within AFGE, and you got people here from all over the country doing training.
AFGE members across the country are very familiar with, obviously, AFGE's legislative conference, but this human rights training conference has really gained a lot of traction and a lot of visibility amongst the membership. How proud are you of that?
Oh, I'm real proud of it. I'm extremely proud of it. It's one of the trainings that AFGE puts on every year, and, you know, all the locals look forward to coming to it to be trained.
And how important is it for AFGE to be doing things like this, to have trainings for the members every year to keep their skills sharp?
I think it's extremely important when you look at what's going on in the federal government right now. It's extremely important that our people come and learn how to litigate cases and do the things that they need to do to handle a grievance or to go to the Merit System Protection Board or to go through the EEO process.
I believe the last time that we had a chance to speak with you, it was at the VA Triennial Convention in Los Angeles. Since then, what has been going on in your district, in District 6?
Well, we've still got the cases that's going on within the Department of Defense, within DFAS, Defense Finance and Accounting, and, you know, we're starting to get some decisions back on some of the cases where they have terminated employees because of their security clearances. Basically what they're saying, an employee's credit is determined whether they can hold a government job or not, and so far the courts are disagreeing with them. So we're starting to get those decisions back, and it's starting to have to bring some employees back to work and pay a lot of back pay.
That was a very key issue for you, and for a little backstory for the audience, employees for DFAS, the Defense Finance and Accounting Service, were being laid off, is that right?
They were being terminated.
Being terminated because of what the agency deemed as poor credit.
Right.
Now, tell us a little bit more about that. What was actually happening there? Why was this being brought up in that situation?
Personally, I think that the agency was just trying to downsize and use it to to get rid of employees. The problem that you had is what the agency was doing is if an employee filed bankruptcy, then the agency, when they ran a background check, if that employee decided to be promoted, apply for a promotion, or did something that triggered them to do a background check, they did a background check, and they would say, well, we see that you filed for bankruptcy, and so therefore we want you to explain why you filed for this bankruptcy, even though the courts had allowed that employee, it already did away with the bankruptcy. They required the employee to disclose why they had this bad debt. And, you know, they were terminating employees because of it. And it wasn't just that. I mean, it was even if an employee, if they went and pulled a credit report, and the credit report had something that was derogatory on it, the employee may have owed it, may not have owed it, but they expected the employee to either pay it or they were terminated.
So even if there were inaccuracies on the credit report, they were still being held accountable for that by
yes.
the agency.
Yes.
At a time when millions of Americans are out of work,
yeah.
what did that do for those employees? I mean, the morale at that agency.
Well, the morale was low, and it still is low because, I mean, they still do it. They've kind of slowed down a little bit, though, because, like I said, the decisions are coming back, and they're ruling against them. I was personally involved with one case. The agency was told by the judge when it went through the adjudication process to bring the employee back that they felt that they should bring the employee back. The agency disagreed with it, terminated the employee. So now the judge just ruled against them and said bring them back and pay the employee back pay plus interest on the case. And basically told the agency that if they wanted to appeal it, then they needed to comply. You know, in other words, we're not going to keep allowing you to drag this out and harm the employee.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with AFGE 6th District National Vice President Arnold Scott. NVP Scott, how did the agency respond to that ruling by the court?
Well, I don't know because it's something that's new. It's a new decision that's come out, and I don't think that they've responded yet, but we'll see where they go. They can appeal the decision, but I think if they appeal it, they'll lose that.
As you know, as a leader within AFGE, federal employees are under attack like never before. Have you ever seen anything like this in your career where federal employees were such a target?
It has been a long time since I've seen federal employees be attacked, but I've never seen them attack like they're being attacked right now. I mean, it's crazy what's going on. I mean, it's kind of like people just don't tell the truth just because they don't want to tell the truth. I mean, even though they know what the truth is, you have people that won't correct it even when they know the truth.
Why do you think this is happening now and during this time?
I think that there's so much hatred built up right now when you talk about the politicians. I just think the federal employees are caught up in the middle. You know, you got a group of people who are extremists out there who want to, you know, downsize the federal government. They want the government off the backs of corporations. And, you know, that when that happened, they only want it off the back as long as it's doing something that they don't want it to do. But when something happens and they need the federal government, then they want the federal government, you know. A good example is when you talk about the bailouts that happened with the banks. I think that's a good example to take. You know, if the federal workers were doing the job they were supposed to be doing, then they'd have been regulating these banks, and they wouldn't have been in the position of too big to fail and all of this foolishness that happened. But yet and still, once they got in that position because they wanted, want the government off their backs, then all of a sudden they want the taxpayers to spend all of this money bailing them out. So, I mean, it's kind of crazy what's going on right now.
When you hear talk of cuts and pay freezes, budget reductions, what goes through your mind when you think of the impact on public service?
Well, I just think that it's a thing where it's like a race to the bottom. You know, it's almost like when you talk about pensions, they don't want government workers. They want government workers to pay more towards their pension, you know, and you know, just because out in the private sector, you know, these companies have stolen the employees' pensions and everything else, now it's to the point where they get out there and spend it like government employees shouldn't have pensions, you know. And pensions have become a thing of the past or something. I mean, it's just crazy what they do.
Ultimately, then, what is AFGE's response to this? How is the union fighting back against these attacks?
Well, AFGE is fighting back, but it's kind of hard when you got dedicated employees and they want to do what they can, you know, for the country. And when you have people out there saying that federal employees ought to pay more for this and ought to pay more for their health care, you know, is pay more for everything. But federal employees are dedicated workers. They're trying to do a great job for the American public. In most cases, they don't complain. And personally, I think we should be fighting something. And it's like they just want to do the government work, you know. And they don't want to get in they don't want to get into a fight with all of these people who say that government is bad.
AFGE 6th District National Vice President Arnold Scott, thank you for your time.
All right, thank you.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, AFGE SSA Local 3448 Labor Management Relations Vice President Patty Davis-Sazzo will address challenges in the Social Security Administration.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. Coming back to you from AFGE's Region B Training Conference in Chicago, we're joined now by Patty Davis-Sazzo, the Labor Management Relations Vice President of SSA Local 3448 out of Ohio. Patty, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So first, tell us what you're doing here this week at the conference and what you're hoping to get out of it.
Well, one of the things I think as a labor leader is I really need to have as much information as possible available to me. So having this opportunity to come and train with the experts and really find out all the ins and outs and what I really need to know to do my job well to protect my members, that's what I need to do. So that's why I'm here.
What are some of the classes that you'll be taking this week?
Well, actually, I'm signed up for the EEO basic class, which is, of course, the Equal Employment Opportunity class. And it's basically just, again, explaining what the process is all about, what really is an EEO case and what isn't, so that we obviously don't waste time looking in one direction when we should be looking in another. But also protecting our employees. For Social Security, that's the agency I'm with, we've had a lot of discrimination in that agency based on age, based on disability. So these are things that it's really important to us that we know what we're doing when we're helping our members.
If you could share with us in the audience a little bit about what is and is not an EEO case.
Well, actually, we were just learning that, so it's very good. There's several things that are considered for EEO cases. Age, disability, sex, national origin. There's quite a few, but there's also a lot of things that are not. For example, I thought that one of them would be your choice in sexual preference, for example, and that's not one, which I thought it was, but it wasn't. So it's kind of funny. There's some things, as the trainer explained, some things are state issues that, you know, based on the state that you're in, that might be illegal to discriminate on that basis, but not on the federal basis. So quite interesting.
How important is it
for AFGE to hold these trainings around the country year-round for its members?
Oh, I think it's so important. Because, to be quite honest, to be a rep in the office for Social Security in a field office, my main job is a claims representative. And believe me, I am very, very busy in that job. We don't have enough workers in the field offices. Obviously, we're going to be losing even more as people retire and we can't replace them. But every minute of my day while I'm at work is tied up with serving the public, and I don't have the time to work on the issues or really learn the things I need to learn in order to protect my members. So I can occasionally take official time so I can sit down and really get the information in, but quite frankly, there's always things that have to be done during that official time, and you really don't have the time to learn new things. So this is so important for that.
Talk about the impact that the understaffing and underfunding of SSA has impacted your job.
It is very frustrating for a field office employee because we really, truly do take service seriously. We want to do a good job for the public, and it's very hard for us because we look at our interview board and we have four more people waiting to talk to us. And you kind of feel sometimes that you have to rush through an interview because you have so many other people waiting for you. But these people, that's their lives. You know, you're talking about somebody who worked for a company for 20 years and then became disabled and can't work at that job, and they're not trained for anything else. This is their life they're telling you about. And you have to take the time to listen and to get all the information they need so that you can make sure that their disability claim has the best chance possible.
With that understanding, and given the fact that you do what you do out of a feeling of service, mm-hmm. How does it make you feel when you read the newspaper or watch the television or listen to the radio and so-called experts are calling for cuts to the service that the federal worker provides to the public?
It's very, very frustrating because I think federal employees have become a target, and it's an easy target because so many people don't understand what we do for them. The government is just this big entity that they don't understand how it affects their daily life. But I know the customers that come into our office and talk to us, and we take the claims from them, we answer their questions, they're thankful of what we do. They tell us, I'm so glad you're here. You really helped me understand this. So that's what we're there for. That's what we want to do. And when we have these kind of situations where they're continuing to cut and limit our ability to help our customers, then it's even more frustrating for us because we still feel the need. We still see the need. We still feel the need to fill that need, but we can't do it.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Patty Davis-Sazzo, the Labor Management Relations Vice President of AFGE Social Security Administration, Local 3448 in Ohio. Patty, what are the consequences of cutting the funding of agencies like SSA?
Well, first of all, you have people out there that really don't know where to turn. And the Social Security employees are there for them when they need the assistance. They come to us. We help them through the process. If we're not there, if we have to close our doors early, they have to, you know, maybe they need to file for survivor's benefits and they're still working. They have to then take time off work to come in because we're not available when, you know, at 4 o'clock when they're getting off work. So it makes it very difficult for the individuals that we're serving. It also, of course, affects the morale in the office, affects tension. People get stressed out more because they can't do everything that they need to do. That leads to then unhealthy workers, people having to take time off work because of the stress. It leads to diseases, you know, heart diseases and blood pressure problems. There's just no end. It just continues to cause more and more problems.
What can be done to improve that morale, to ease that stress a little bit on the workers?
Well, I mean, definitely we need to have the basic resources available to us, which is have the right amount of staff to handle the public. You know, our public is increasing. People, the baby boomers are retiring. We're having a lot more people coming into our office and calling us on the phone or even filing online, which is a wonderful thing, but we're still processing those claims. So we have to have the right amount of people there to process those claims timely. we are held to very high standard, and we want to do the best job we can, but if we don't have the resources available to talk to all those individuals, to pull in all those internet claims, to answer the phones, then you're just going to see the service decline.
Patty, what's the best part of your job?
I love when I'm able to really help people understand our policies and our programs. I think I told you earlier, I handle survivor claims. And I remember as a claims representative one particular situation where the mother had just come in, a woman had just come in, her husband had just died on the job. She had 5 children under the age of 7. Her husband did not have life insurance. Without Social Security, I don't know what she would have done. And when I told her, when I took her claim and told her how much we'd be able to pay her and her family, she cried. She started to cry. And she said, I don't know what I'd do without this. Because she had children, young children, that she needed to take care of. She didn't feel that she could go back to work at that point in time after they had just lost their father. And Social Security was there for her. So that's what we do.
And what drew you to the labor movement? You're obviously very active in your local. You're a leader within your local. What drew you to that?
I have always, fairness is very important to me. I've always kind of had that growing up. It's one of those things that's kind of led me the way that I've gone. I've always wanted to things to be fair. But I also want to be able to have a say in my workplace. Workers have a lot of great ideas. And unfortunately, a lot of times they're not listened to. And if we were listened to more often, I think we'd be able to run things pretty good. But unfortunately, a lot of what we say is just kind of not paid attention to. So part of the labor movement, being a part of a union, is getting your voice heard. And even if they don't listen, at least they had to hear what we say. So that's, to me, one of the reasons that I really think the union is so important.
What's your proudest moment as a union member?
I would say there's been a lot, actually, because I've really seen some good things happen based on actions I've taken. One of the things in my local office, we were told by management that we could not have any more employees, even though we had lost some. And the reason they said we couldn't have any more is because we didn't have enough desks. And I pursued that issue, and I wrote to my area director, and I talked to my manager, and I said, you know, we were actually considered one of the stress offices, meaning that we had so many people coming into our office that they were waiting too long to be serviced. I said, it makes no sense that we can't get extra people in this office, so let's just build a new workstation. You know, there were places in our office where you could put a cubicle, and I took the management people around and showed them this. You know, we can do this. We need the people in here. Well, of course, management kept telling me, no, 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 we can't do it. Well, then miraculously, just a few months later, instead of building one workstation, they ended up building two, and we were able to get the new employees. So that was very, very beneficial, and I think it really made everybody feel good about the process.
And as you look forward, what are you hoping to accomplish?
I really want to get more people actively involved in the union. People understand, a lot of people understand what the union's about and why it's so important, but until you actually get involved and start doing some extra things with the union, you really can't feel its strength. And that's what I would like to see, is people get a little bit more active, then be able to really feel those successes and learn from them.
Patty Davis Sato, Labor Management Relations Vice President for AFGE SSA Local 3448. Patty, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you to our guest this week, AFGE SSA Local 1760 Vice President Sean O'Connell, National Vice Presidents Dwight Bowman and Arnold Scott, and SSA Local 3448 Labor Management Relations Vice President Patty Davis Sato. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife.